Hello there. It's James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Johnny Test,
Fred Flintstone,
and one of my personal favorites, Leonardo. And you are listening to Epic Tales from the Sewer. It's totally awesome. Turtle power. Go, go, go.
Party wagon and hold on to your pizza.
Welcome back, everybody, to Epic Tales from the Sewers. I am your most excellent host, Justin. With me, my co-host, Mr. Eric Will.
That's you. How's it going? How's it going?
It's going.
Dude's
great,
like,
man.
Dude's like, that's you. Like, you didn't know who was you. It is.
Who is it?
Well, it's different too, because the last episode had a different host for both of us, so we're getting back in the groove, and you know, we're not coming alone tonight.
Right,
we brought
Stella.
Some guests. Yeah, we brought some guests from Legacy Comics, the publisher label. First, our friend of the show and one of the founding members of the Epic Shells Facebook group, which I say he's the artist on the Apollyon. Is it Apollyon? How do I say it?
Yeah, Apollyon.
Apollyon comic book, and he has the Godfoe Universe podcast, Nuggets, and I'm going to say it wrong. It's the Disciple Cast?
Yeah, Pathways for Discipleship.
Pathways, okay.
Yeah.
Discipleship,
Bible
okay.
Stuff.
And one of my favorites, the Fringes Horror Podcast series, which is great, and I'm hoping makes a comeback. Mr. Joshua Adams, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Glad to get you up and
stinks
get
in
you
this sewer here, but
in this, yeah. Well, you get used to it. You know, it's a little oozy at times. But joining us in the sewers, as you mentioned, the owner and editor in chief of Legacy Comics. He is the writer and the creator of Condry, The Job, and Croom. He's also the editor in chief of it's ReviewFix.com, and the senior writer of the Old School Gamer magazine. Writer of the Minds Behind the Game series of books. Let's see. So Mind Behind the Games, Adventure Games, Sports, Shooter, Sega Genesis, and PlayStation games. Amongst these wonderful accolades, he's also a voice actor and the assistant director of journalism program at Kingsborough Community College. The full director at the Kingsborough Community College, Brooklyn, New York, as well as still the chairman?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Still the chairman of the City University of New York, the City University of New York's Journalism Discipline Council, Mr. Patrick Hickey Jr.
This goes on.
And I can satisfy my wife physically. So
that's that's what it's all about, right? There.
Not emotionally, but
yeah, no.
No, we're still working on that. That's a work in progress.
I mean, come on. This is a grown person's podcast about Ninja Turtles, so let's we'll get there eventually. So, which is interesting too, because we have two guests on today, and you may be asking yourself, "Hey, Justin and Eric, you guys normally have a whole bunch of Ninja Turtles people on." Yes, mm-hmm. But we also encourage all kinds of creative product projects and endeavors from folks that we find interesting and turtle adjacent. And I happen to know that these two gentlemen are really big Turtles fans.
Yes,
very much absolutely. So.
And it's pretty funny too, because just going into this, Patrick sounds exactly like Raphael should sound in the Ninja Turtles movie. So
yes, he does.
I always think of what the hell was that? I don't know. Looks like a big turtle. You're going to LaGuardia, oh, right?
Jose,
yeah,
boy,
I'm from Brooklyn, so I got that Brooklyn accent. So mm-hmm.
Tell me you didn't pay money for this.
It's right there. It was the lowest of the low hanging fruit. So, you know, and being a voice actor, I mean, do you ever think about, you know, trying out for the voice of Raphael?
Oh, I would love to do a turtle. I had a huge bucket list entry probably like 6 months ago. I voiced Nicolas Cage in the Renfield video game. And,
oh, that sounds amazing. What'd it sound like?
It was awesome. So the thing is, I'm not doing it.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, no, it did. You did it just as good as I would. But a lot of it was there's not a lot of story in the game, so a lot of it was like grunts and, you know, mm-hmm. one word here, one word there. So but I literally voiced like 30 different characters in that game. And nice. One of them was Nicolas Cage's. It wasn't Nicolas Cage per se, it was Nicolas Cage's portrayal of Dracula. So that, you know, I didn't have to be all like in a cage with bees, so to speak. I had to more like, you know, mirror his performance in Renfield. So I had to throw on my Transylvanian accent and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun. But I voiced Macho Man Randy Savage in WrestleQuest. I voiced Legion of Doom.
Everyone else in WrestleQuest.
Yeah, I did. So the Guinness World Record is like 34 voices by one voice actor in a game. And pretty sure I've done over 60 in WrestleQuest. So we've been trying to authenticate it with Guinness for couple of months. They're not the easiest Holy people my. To get a hold of for some reason, but I would love to do like Casey Jones.
Yeah, you know? I can see that too,
you know, somebody like that. But I grew up on the Turtles, and I've written 7 books on video game history, so like the Turtles have a wonderful history of video game success.
That may actually come up,
so I mean
I do have around
a way to be socially relevant for so long. I've interviewed Kevin Eastman before when I was an editor at NBC. I was an editor at NBC for 3 years, and when that Turtle movie was coming out in 2014, I think.
Was the Michael Bay movies. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was talking. He the interview was basically saying like Michael Bay isn't going to screw this up, you know. So I don't know. The jury is out on that, but he has giving
changed
like
his
know,
mind. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think on the record he's actually changed his mind. So,
mm-hmm.
I like the second one. The second one's cool.
Yeah, the second one was a little better.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, the second one is definitely better. We got Bebop and Rocksteady and Krang. So
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, can't complain about not that. Not to chase that rabbit too far. But my biggest issue with the Bay version of the Turtles is that they're so big. Like I like my Turtles to be smaller and feel like underdogs. I don't like them to look like the Hulk
Transformers
shell. Yeah, we're Transformers. Yeah. And the noses were kind of weird too.
Yeah.
I could have lived with that if they had been smaller. Like the personalities of the Turtles, they got pretty well. I just didn't like how big they were.
Bulletproof and all that. And
yeah, it was a little missing the point, I think.
Well, let's talk about this then. So since we're talking about the Bayverse, which is not your guys' bailiwick or cup of tea, what was your first entrance into Turtles, gentlemen? Then we'll talk about what your favorite version is.
I've never entered a turtle.
Okay.
I know for me, and like, you know, I was born in 83, so I grew up watching the 87 cartoon, you know, and the first theatrical experience that I genuinely remember was the first movie, like that original live action movie. And that I remember just thinking, like, first off, it's still a perfect movie. Like, it's one of the very few movies that it has aged perfectly. Like, there's not mm-hmm. a thing I would change about that movie. I could quote the whole movie from start to finish, and everybody that grew up loving that movie is the same way. Like we could all like you hear one line of it and you quote the whole scene.
Yeah.
So like it nailed the aesthetic. It made it dark and gritty, and you know, Raph saying bad words. Mm-hmm. way. But then also like it still felt like a movie that kids could enjoy. It had the humor. It was the perfect representation of what that world was and could be. So like, yeah, definitely the old school cartoon, you know, all the action figures and stuff, and you know, that original movie, and I was hooked for life.
That makes sense. How about you, Patrick? You're still on mute.
Can't hear you.
There you
hear
go.
Me now?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I was having some headset issues. I was so hardcore. I still am hardcore, but I was so hardcore that I'll just say something. And we'll see if you could finish it. You ready to test your turtle? We're coming out of our shit.
Dude, yeah. I had that tape. I had that cassette. I listened to
I actually have that tape the there. Can I have the cassette. I have.
Oh, do you so know Skipping? Do you know Skipping Stones?
Yes, yes. And Walk Straight, Walk Straight. I can't hear you, Nana. Like, oh my god! Like, it was one of those things where, as a kid, I learned how to read super early, and I was playing video games super early. You know, 4 or 5 years old, mm-hmm. And Turtles was just this really cool property. You know, obviously the cartoon was the introduction for me, but then that first video game that came out that, like, a lot of people are polarized on, I loved because it was difficult. It was difficult as hell, you know, and swimming through, you know, the shocks and stuff. Like, I adored that game. And then playing the arcade game around the corner from my house. And then they were just, like, we lived in such an amazing time in the 80s and the 90s. It was, like, everything that The Simpsons touched, like, was awesome. And then everything that, like, the Turtles touched was awesome. Like, they had music, they had cartoons, they had the my dad's car broke down when we went to go see the Ninja Turtles movie, and we had to walk like the last 15 blocks to the theater, and I was exhausted. And but once we sat down and that movie started, it's just like Josh nailed it. It was just like perfect from start to finish, like casted beautifully. Like, the action scenes were great. It just got this great sense of ambiance. Like, you can smell New York City, you know. And the thing is, like, I grew up in New York City. I've lived my entire life in New York City, and it's just like, still to this day, the beginning of that film, when it comes down, you're just like, yeah, man, that's 80s New York. They just nailed it. And sadly, as we've gotten older, you know, and the other editions of the cartoon haven't, like, held as much weight as the original, but they've still been watchable. The video games, on, like, I remember when Konami brought it back on PS2, those were fun. They were different, but they were still fun. And then thankfully Xbox Live Arcade, they remastered Turtles in Time, so then that got introduced to a whole nother, you know. And just like I said, you know, when I was at NBC, and it's like Turtles has been like a consistent part of my life. I remember whenever my dad would stay home from work, it was always the same episode that would play. It was like fate. Every time my dad would be all happy, like, he's staying home from work and hanging out with us and stuff, and then Ninja Turtles would come on and be like, I crave pizza no more. My dad's like, every freaking time, it's the same goddamn episode, blah, 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 blah. So it was just like, they've just been a huge part of my childhood. And I just feel like as you get older, like, you just become more like Splinter. I think it's like when you're a kid, you're like one of the four, you know? And I've always had to be like a I've always had to be like a Leonardo. Ooh. Like, I've always had to be like the, you know, in charge of like the crazy people in my life. But then it's just like, the older you get, you're just like, yeah, I'm Splinter. So, but it's just,
it's one of my favorite mediums. As a journalism professor, do you think that April O'Neil in the first movie went too easy on Chief Stearns?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, it's so much fun to see, like, how they interact with each other. Cause, like, as a journalist, it's just like, she's just like taking a whole, like, ton of abuse, you know, like, she's got like a great story and he just like has like zero support of her, you know, just like, yeah. it just like fires her like that. It's just like, I mean, real talk, I probably shouldn't even tell the story, but the stuff that I've seen when I was at NBC, oh my God, that people didn't get fired for. And like, April is just getting fired for like no reason. She got fired. Like, how many times did she get fired during that movie? You know, like,
I don't know.
Oh my God. And it's just like, she's on the tail of like this great story as it's developing, you know. And he's a pretty crappy editor, and he's got his own problems. His son is a crook, you know, like, oh my God. So, you know.
Well, let me ask this. Does anybody else remember, like, and have like warm, fuzzy feelings when you think about that Wright Field Pizza Hut commercial?
Absolutely.
That was at the beginning of the VHS tape.
We did a post maybe about a month ago about that, because a lot of people didn't know that was a, like, a Peter, Paul and Mary song. So, and most people had no idea. They're like, oh, that's the Pizza Hut song. I'm like, oh yeah, this will blow your friggin' mind. I'm like, what? Yeah, absolutely. I think that's along the lines of, everybody that I know who had the VHS tape can sing that verbatim, you know, or at least they'll get most of the words right. So, but yeah, that's That's like if somebody did that when I went to go see a concert, I mean, there would be lighters up everywhere. It would be just iconic. Yeah, it's a good call. Yeah, absolutely. What is what do you think might be something that they miss in the comics or on the shows with April being a journalist? Anything about like the lifestyle, the culture that you feel, Patrick, that they miss out on?
I just feel like April, first off, she gets way too close to her sources. That's the first thing, you know, and April doesn't necessarily like write the tell all, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, she's always like protecting like the turtle's identity and stuff like that. Like she's not like, she doesn't go in for like the full on expose. You know what I'm saying? Like
she's a little biased.
Yeah, yeah, she's too biased, you know? It's like to the point where like a journalist would be like, listen, you guys saved my life and all, but you gotta write the story.
I also feel like she had a pretty nice apartment in the second movie. Did you get paid well enough to live like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's
she looked like she was living pretty high. That was a nice apartment for New York for a struggling reporter.
Yeah, struggling reporter in New York City does not, they live in like a shack, you know, outside of Pizza Hut, you know, not that, you know.
Maybe it was a circumstance she's got that insurance money from the burnt down store.
Plus, she also somehow turned into a brunette.
Yeah.
You're right. It's like Back to the Future, Back to Future 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
They switched out, his girlfriend. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, We usually ask this, and we'll ask a crowd, and a crowd will have, okay, how many people here? What's your favorite turtle? Raise your hand, sort of thing like that. And most of the time we see that we're pretty like scattered with that. And it's usually pretty close to, if not like 25 to 30%. Well, what's your guy's favorite turtle?
You want to go first, Josh?
As a kid, it was Raph. As an adult, it's Donnie.
Nice. Mm. Okay. Why do you think it changed?
I think,
or did you just follow Rob Paulson?
Yeah. No, I think as a kid, it was more so that, like, I thought the size were cool. You know, I liked his weapon the most, and it was, you know, it was fun to play with. But because you could always, like, catch the other guy's weapon in the side and stuff. Like, I like that. But, you know, as you get older, you realize, man, he's kind of just has no control over himself whatsoever. You know, and I think for me, the thing that made me care more about Donnie than I ever had before was in the IDW comic run when they broke his shell and you know, that whole story arc really made me care about him more than I ever had before. And now that idea of him being the smart kind of, you know, the nerdier guy that, like, yeah, he can fight, but he's definitely the outlier of that group in terms of his personality. And I don't know, I like that. It speaks to me.
Cool. Yeah. He has a hard time being a skeptic and also accepting the fact that he's been reincarnated. And they mm-hmm. talk about this a little bit when they get transported up to the neutrino planet. If they're rebuilding you from nothing, just atoms and all that, what's the soul? And he doesn't understand that. So he's pretty... existential, I'd say.
Yeah, they did stuff. IDW did stuff on that run with the turtles that I have a ton of respect for. Like, they really took that IP and elevated it, I think.
That's great. Good answer. And how about you there, Patrick?
I've always been a Leonardo guy. Just because I'm sure Josh could tell you this. I like to be in charge. I like to be, just a little bit. I like to be in charge. I feel like I have like a system that I think that like if everyone like kind of like operates within that, like we can get amazing stuff done. I'm the planner. Like I have a lot of respect for, you know, the people that have come before me and that have done things differently. I have a twin brother. And he's more like a Michelangelo or a Raphael. So I've always had to be like the either the Donnie or the Leo in contrast to like wherever he was going. So I always had to be the smarter one or the stronger one or the more disciplined one, pretty much like my entire life. And now I'm a dad with two kids, and it's just like as much as I would love to be Raph and just start like, you know, doing all crazy shit, I can't. So it's like I'm super disciplined. So I have always like kind of connected with Leonardo.
Nice. Yeah.
It's interesting because I guess like canonically they're all the same age. Because, you know, at least
kind of. I mean,
somewhat kind of, but
Leo's older, you know.
Yeah.
He was older when he was a human.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it depends on which, you know, which version of the story you're going with. But I do think that they did a good job, at least in the sense of like the personalities of showing like that birth order kind of thing of like the oldest is the responsible one. He's the oldest, always has to be like, guys, this is a dumb idea. You know, you get the middle, the next kid's always the angry one. Yeah, and then you've got the youngest is always the baby that gets away with everything. And that's the one. Like, they did a great job showing family dynamic. And I'm an only child, but I was raised with a lot of cousins, but I didn't have any brothers or sisters. But like my wife had a big family. And like I can see that same dynamic play out at every family get together. Like you can see the birth order stuff is so like on the nose and accurate. Like I think the turtles, that's what works so well, is that they really genuinely feel like a family. And that's something that a lot of other things have tried to do and not pulled off. But turtles consistently, every version of the turtles, even the ones that are kind of lousy, nail the family dynamic.
Yeah.
I think you have to. And that was my big takeaway from that Bay movie, you know, was the brotherhood and the goofiness and that elevator scene where they're just making those funny noises and they start like hip hop beatboxing and all that.
Yeah, that's the most authentic scene in that whole movie.
It's the best scene, I think. It's the only scene that makes any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's really cool. I did get to listen to your podcast today, Patrick, about series building 101. You mentioned a good foundation of a team book would be to tell stories about individual characters and then build. We're seeing the opposite right now in IDW, where there's going to be four new IDW TMNT titles right now. They just announced them today as breaking news. How would you handle separating characters from a big team book like this in a work of yours?
Well, I think what I meant on the podcast was like getting like original IPs that haven't been developed yet. So that's the good thing with the Turtles. Like all of those characters pretty much have been, you know, we know who they are, what they stand for. So you could jump into a full-on team book already because everyone knows what those characters bring to the table. I said that mainly on the podcast because so often I have people pitch me a team book and they're just like going to tell like, well, they're in this galaxy and they're fighting this guy. And it's just like, well, yeah. We don't know anything about this team. We don't know anything about their motivation, any of that stuff. So like, why don't we take a step back first? You know, just like I've literally had people tell me things like, oh, wait until like this book gets to like the seventh or eighth issue. That's when it like really starts to take off. And I'm just like, by the time we get to the seventh or eighth issue, if no one's bought it, it's not going to survive. Like it's not going to be around anymore. Like I tell people all the time, like if my books don't sell, then they die. Like I kill them. Like I'm not going to, you know, we've gotten to Condry 6 because the other books have sold enough to warrant, you know, we have other series that are stuck at like one right now. And I tell my team, you want to make another book, we got to move like another 7,500 copies because, you know, it's not going to be there. So I don't think like what I said in that podcast, like kind of connects to like the Turtles, but like, obviously like, if they want any success, they're going to have to totally keep with like the things that have made the Turtles a household name for the past. Oh my God. I can't believe I'm going to say this, like close to 40 years, but then at the same time, what's going to be the drawing point? Like, what's going to make these books different than the litany, the huge, you know, smorgasbord of turtle stuff that we have now? So you know, so they have to continue to do the good things, but then they have to introduce something new. It's rough. I would not want to write a Turtles book at this point. You know, like it's hard.
So, Justin, I didn't realize that's the first I had heard about the new several new series coming out. So I'm going to look at that. I'll just ask you, are any of these new series following the kind of the younger new turtles that were introduced at the end of Last Ronin?
That one will be out in about 12 days. So, yes. Okay. So yes, that's going to be out. That's it's Last Ronin 2. It's called like Re-Evolution, I believe.
Okay.
So yes, that will have them. There's going to be Saturday morning is going, but it's going to be Saturday morning and Usagi Yojimbo, which is awesome.
Nice. I love and, Usagi.
Yeah, yeah. There's one called like Mutant Nation, which is going to be probably following the folks who have mutated in Mutant Town. There's Ninja Turtles Black, White, and Green, which we anticipate is an anthology series. So, which is badly needed. Like,
yeah, that'll we be need awesome. That.
So you guys could write and draw that book. Yeah,
gladly.
Cool, right? Yeah, do that.
Gladly. Like, you know? In a heartbeat.
And then we've got the Night Watcher, which is going to be
that's one I'm really
Raphael in his Iron Man sort of suit, just fighting crime on his own. So, which is really what led me to kind of this question, because it's you're getting that character who's breaking off from a team, and Raph is to me the one who's the easiest to write, because it's, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm having an emotional outburst. I'll just comment what I'm thinking. it's like, all right, but am I wrong? You know, it's like. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the hardest to write are Leonardo and Michelangelo. And if you historically look, I would bet dollars to, you know, donuts, you know, traditional pre-fight donuts, that Michelangelo speaks the least in all the comic books if you add them all up. So,
yeah, you know. That's why I was so glad that was the direction Last Ronin went. Because Mikey is such a just a goofball, like getting to see him have to be an adult was such a cool plot line. Because you're right, it's just he's comedy, he's diversion, he doesn't carry a story very well. He only carries a story if he's the one that gets like put in damsel in distress territory.
It's so hard.
It's really hard. Raphael is easy to write a story around.
Yeah,
like,
you know, he went out and he got in a fight. Okay, what happened? Who was there? Yeah. Where were they? Oh, well, this thing just wrote itself.
Yeah. Did you guys ever read, I think it was called Body Count?
Oh, of course, yeah.
That Simon Beasley did with, and it was Raphael and Casey Jones. Dude, that was such a cool, like, side story that I would have loved to have more of. And you can do that really easily with him. But yeah, I don't, it's hard to write a Mikey story.
And you know, that's kind of another question I was going to ask is, you know, what kind of characters, so going more into your guys' work, what kind of characters are the hardest to write or tell stories about?
What do you think, Josh?
I think a lot of times it's not easy to write a character. Like, it's you can write a vigilante, give him a tragic backstory and let him go. That's not hard. You can write villains. You know, give them a motivation and let them be evil. That's fine. It's harder to write. I think that the two things that are hardest for me to wrap my head around are characters like Superman, who are so overpowered that nothing feels like a threat to them. So you have to find a way to either completely break them down, which makes every other hero look weak. That's what they did with Doomsday. Doomsday destroys the Justice League and then kills Superman. Or you have to like attack that character on an emotional level, which is not an easy thing to write.
Yeah.
Without like actually deconstructing and dishonoring the character. Or it's hard to write a story, I think, from a ordinary, everyday person point of view, because you're trying to find anything that's interesting in the dull life existence that we go through. It's hard to make an ordinary life character exciting. But that's why I think they did such a good job, at least in the old days with Spider-Man, of like, he's got a job. He's like, he's got to be on time. He's barely paying his bills. His apartment sucks. His girlfriend's pissed at him or dead. Like his,
yeah,
like
his,
I remember laughing so hard at that whole time in the 90s when like the worst thing going on in Peter's life was he was pissed that Mary Jane was smoking again. Like, how's that a real conflict? So, like, I don't know. Those are the types of characters for me that are kind of, I'd have a hard time wrapping my head around. I would not want to write a Superman story. Like, I'd struggle with the godlike human, like, that's got so much power that nothing can hurt them. That's a hard story to write, I think. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree. I think on, like, Talking Comics, probably, like, 6 months ago, I did an episode on how I would actually write a Superman arc. And I'm going to piss Josh off right now. I wanted Rob Liefeld to draw it. Just because I think it would just, it would move books. It would get headlines and people would be like, okay.
It'd just be a whole book of nothing but pecs and no feet.
Yep. But it would be awesome. So like,
that's actually the name of the title.
Yep. Pecs, no feet. Pecs, no feet. But, Superman's biggest weakness isn't like technically kryptonite. It's the fact that he fell in love with a woman.
Yeah.
And women get old. And women go through menopause and postpartum and this and that. So just like, what if one day Lois wakes up and looks in the mirror and is just like, looks at her chest and looks at her hairline and is just like, oh my God, why is he with me? You know, and she goes on Facebook and starts talking to her old high school boyfriend who's now like 400 pounds. And, you know, and Superman comes home one day and she's not there. But her phone's there and he starts going through her phone and stuff. And now, oh my God, pick a supervillain. He's back and Superman has to deal with him. But then at the same time, too, he's like, his heart is with Lois and he has to deal with that. That could break him so much more than Doomsday or Brainiac or any of those other people ever could, you know? So it was just like, I had a lot of fun just like conjuring that whole thing. And it's just like, I look at every character as being broken in one way or another. And that's like a big theme in Conjuring, that like, you know, the main characters, he lost his dad. It's like on paper, it's this stereotypical vigilante tale. But I mean, there's a ton of like Highlander and Count of Monte Cristo in it and stuff. And he's broken. And then he meets a woman, an elderly woman that lost her husband to like the same type of gang violence, and she's broken. And it's just like, we're defined really by like the things that like hurt us the most and how we respond to those things. So it's just like, whenever I look at a character, I'm kind of like, all right, why is this character getting up every morning in spite of, like, you know? And that's how I try and build them out. The turtles, that could be a fun conversation. Like, what has broken the turtles? You know, like, what's their motivation for it? And I think if somebody ever like really got into that hardcore, you know, that could be a fun.
I think that's why the first movie is still the best movie, because, you know, when they lose Splinter, they weren't able to save him. They don't know what has become of him and all of that stuff. They get their butts literally just handed to them, and you know, having to come back from that. And having to figure out how to be brothers and how do we do this without our father?
Yep.
And like, my father's still alive, thank God. But like, I know the day will come where I have to realize how I'm going to be faced with how am I going to do this and continue walking and be the man I am without my father? And, you know, I don't think any other turtle story has really done it as well as that first movie did of like, you guys have to walk on your own. That's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, that's a really great point. You know,
and like you were just talking about the whole like the sensitive thing. You know, like, we're really going to hit them. You know, the emotion inside, and that's the first thing that popped in my head when you said that. And I was like, that was the first thing that popped in my head.
Yep.
And it's just, and of course, you know, the Michael Bay movie Splinter gets taken in that one, which I kind of think they kind of took that one from the original Splinter. You know.
Yeah, that Splinter looked kind of like a dog anyway.
Yeah, they can keep him. No returns without the receipt.
And they can keep that April too, by the way. You know.
No.
I did not like Megan Fox's April. She is terrible. Can I ask you a question?
I'm like, guys, was she a good
journalist? Was she a good one?
A good journalist.
Are you sure?
Real agree. I mean, yes. Vernon, I would have failed her if she took a journalism class.
I mean,
oh yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. I just she's not it. She wasn't it. I mean, Paige Tirico, you know, Judas will always be my April. But Paige,
she liked our post the other day.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. So
Megan Fox blocked you guys, right?
Yeah, I bet she cares.
Machine Gun Kelly for life. No,
oh God.
They're so just weird.
Kidding.
They're so weird together.
They're not together anymore. But it's funny. The reason we're kind of like diving into this stuff and that it's relevant is because the last episode that we had was our three female hosts who came on and gave their perspective. And from their perspective, they really liked the Bayverse, which is funny. And it leads me to something that'll be in the future on the show. We're going to try to figure out, is there a like a masculinity or a femininity to your type of turtle fandom? So, which I think will be pretty interesting to uncover. So who knows, you know, in the future, we'll get there, I suppose.
I think as far as like masculine and feminine go, I think definitely the first film is more macho, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But it's laden though too with like this type of aesthetic that harkens to the video games and the comics more. And it's not as accessible. Like, you have to go into this like with an appreciation for what each character is. It doesn't dumb itself down, really, you know. And I feel like the Bay movies, it's kind of like, you know, the perfect example, like the music in the first like Turtle movie is so different. Like, they didn't go like super commercial and stuff like that. Like, it's about like the whole flavor and aesthetic is about like what the comic book was supposed to be about.
Dark, you know, gritty.
Is my sound going crazy?
No, you sound good.
Oh, okay.
So you had spin that wheel, you know, mm-hmm. What else? Partners in Crime.
You know, the Bay movies, they just like kind of like they wanted to make it accessible. And the first movie was more like, we're going to like do the property right. You know, so it's like naturally, I feel like, you know, people that are unfamiliar with the property. Sorry, women. For the most part, are going to appreciate, you know, the colorful, more fun, you know, versions than the ones that we fell in love with.
Yeah, that's a good perspective, because it's, you know, there, when it comes down to this, who's to say you're right or wrong, you know?
Yeah, like, each is to their own.
It's going
to
be circumstantial, regardless of, you know, well, I guess not regardless, but it'll be circumstantial based on what your personal experiences are. So, you know, it's just, it's neat to have that sort of perspective too, to look at it. Cause I also think that it's a pretty masculine movie when you look at it. There's like two female characters in it. It's like, you wouldn't think of Star Wars like that, but it is. Yeah.
Well, I think too, like, you look at the first Turtles movie and compare it to the second Turtles movie. That first one, if you took a scene from that movie that doesn't have the turtles in it, just a screenshot from that movie that doesn't have the turtles in it, it could be Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Like, it's gritty, it's dark, it's dirty. Like, you would think that's a Scorsese movie until the turtles show up.
Right.
And, you know, even when you see April in that movie, I love her. I was in love with her, but she is not made up. She's not glammed out. She's still feminine, of course, but like, she's very, that side of her is played down.
Yeah, whereas woman next door sort of thing.
Yep. Yeah, and then in that second movie, everything's brighter, everything's sillier, and we get a new April that's the bombshell with the perfect hair and always dressed to the nines. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's an aesthetic that comes with, you know, even with the Bay movies, with all, you know, that the none of the other movies have ever touched that same gritty, dark look that first movie had, all the rain in the streets, and, you know, it felt different, and it doesn't feel necessarily, it's not that women aren't allowed to come play in that movie, but it's definitely doesn't feel like it was made for them. So I guess
like
that,
the Daredevil series, right?
Or The Crow.
Like, right.
Perfect example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or The Crow.
Women love The Crow.
Rain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it is an interesting question that I never thought about it like that. I don't know. Can't imagine why you would like the Michael Bay movies, but
well, that's the thing. Maybe there's something.
Maybe that's
there
how I that know I'm a man. Doing.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you know.
See, that those movies to me are like they're good at some points, and then they're like they're nothing. And nothing's ever going to top the first two movies. Me personally, the first three. Let's just say that the first three.
And yeah, by, no, you're right. The first two.
Yeah, the first two. But I'm just saying, you mean, you know, like
Turtles 3, but, and counting the 2007, right?
You know, with
yeah,
you know, like I said, what the Bay movies brought, you know, which I thought was cool in the second one, Out of the Shadows, where they brought the Technodrome in, they brought Krang in, they brought, mm-hmm. you know, Bebop and Rocksteady, you know, that right there was like what we wanted. In the second yeah. movie of the original.
That won me back a good bit. Like, I was able to watch yeah. and enjoy it. Yeah, I still had my reservations about it, but that's the only reason I watched it was I saw that they were Bebop and Rocksteady and Krang. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'll give it another shot.
And it was Seamus, too, you know, doing Rocksteady.
Well, and them two did yeah. a wonderful job. Now,
oh, yeah, that part was perfect. They killed those two characters.
Them two should be Bebop and Rocksteady. Casey Jones, I felt like they could have did a better job with him. You know, I mean, he just
which is
like,
a shame because he's like a good actor for it. Like, on paper, that made so much sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. But he was like the,
Yeah, it was the way he was written.
You know.
Yeah, it was the way he was written.
Yeah, and it's just. Like, to me, if they would have brought those two guys and put them in a gritty movie, you know, and had that kind of technology for the Technodrome, I mean, that's what I would like to see, you know, the kind of a mix of somewhat of the Bay movie, I should per se, with the technology side towards the Krang stuff. And because if you really want to get technical, the first Michael Bay movie, that was literally Super Shredder.
Yeah.
If you think about it. Because
minus the vanilla ice.
Well, that's the whole thing is if you think about it, you know, Shredder was just dressed up regular and then he had this super suit where he's like, he could bring back all his stuff, you know, and he didn't have that in the second one for the Bay mm-hmm. movie. It just to me like that's what I would like to see. I would like to see them do in a live action Ronin movie. To that
we
right
are
there.
Getting a video game at least that could be really
yes
good.
Yeah. Do you guys think that we're gonna see that now that they've cut staff so severely over there?
Mm. Yeah, they're just cutting fat. To see it.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a no brainer. Like it has to come out. I don't think as far as like video game busts, I think like I'm pretty sure that like every Turtle game that's ever come out has sold at least six figures. You know?
Dude, if they do that one right, that could be a game of the year contender. If they nail the emotion and the gameplay on that game, that mm-hmm. could blow people's minds. Because there's people who will never crack a comic book that'll play a game and that story mm-hmm. will be new for them. And it could be one of the best games ever if they really pull it off.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing because I know that they were talking about the God of War. So mm-hmm. I love, you know, I've played every single God of War series. I've beat every single one of them except for the mobile one, whatever you want to call it. And to me, I don't think the fighting style for God of War is the right way to go. I'm more looking like, I know some people talked about Ghost of Tsushima, or this is just me personally, is Arkham Asylum and Arkham City style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because
I was thinking Onimusha, but I mean, who remembers that anymore besides probably Pat?
I still have the motion activated samurai sword downstairs.
Tenchu stealth assassins.
Yeah, I've interviewed the developers of the Tenchu games. Like Ghost of Tsushima actually has some of the Tenchu developers on that team. So if you guys love, you know, those games, that the DNA is totally mm-hmm. shared. So,
but I know that they're coming out with a Ghost of Tsushima 2. They're in talks or they're doing it. I don't know, it's in development or something like that. Mm-hmm. You would probably know more about the game stuff more than I would. I love. I'm a big gamer. I mean, I have like 11 of the old system. I got like 49 Turtle games myself.
Love it.
And
I only play Dreamcast.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I got two Turtle games sitting here, right?
Ah, a nice. Man of culture.
Love it.
Yes. Tell me more of Power Stone. That's good.
I kind of feel like Last Ronin should have a certain amount of that Deus Ex Machina game look too. Called just the setting, that cyberpunk kind of gritty cyberpunk setting.
Yeah,
man, it could be. So, I hope it's good. I really hope it's good.
Oh, it's like that one cover that Ben Bishop did where he was on the bike and coming out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that cover?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Obviously,
awesome.
You know, it's you know,
what a silly question, Eric. No,
that would be, you know, like I think, you know, with like Ben and the Squares of Brothers, I really, really feel they should have a big input in that.
Oh, for definitely. That
game, just because of the art behind it and everything. I mean, they it's like you said, I could see a big potential of them being the game of the year if they do it right. Man, they have to. I mean, they can't just have it as a 8-10 hour game. Like, you have, I feel like you could really, really grind it out, you know. To,
yeah, it should, too it long, should but, have it could be about the same as like a Last of Us type game. Like, that's the,
yeah.
the kind oh, of campaign wow. you need.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's the type of campaign you need.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a big story.
Yeah, it's a big story, and there's a lot to.
You piss everyone off and make it like Dark Souls.
No.
Make it so inaccessible to the weeb.
And they'll be like, damn it, there's this friggin' damn level.
Right.
You got. It's okay if I.
Hi, this is Adam, aka Casey Jones from Casey Jones Livewire, and you're listening to Epic Tales from the Sewers. Time for a knuckle sandwich, punk.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. We have very active lifestyles. It's not all wandering the countryside aimlessly or scaring passing motorists. And we all love a good cup of joe. And there's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. Bold, robust, delicious. It's coffee that can wake the dead. With over a dozen different roasts and flavors, Deadly Grounds can satisfy the most finicky of coffee addicts. The aroma is so intoxicating, it brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
I have one claim of fame with video games. It's that I can make it through that without losing a guy. So, you know, just go it all
Same
the way
here.
Through.
Same
you
here.
Know, I'm not much good for anything. It took me 30 years, literally, to learn how to consistently get to Mecha Turtle, you know, in the sewer there where you have to jump. 30 years mm-hmm. later, I go back and I'm like, wow, I've developed the hand-eye coordination to do this jump. Fantastic.
And I can't do anything else. Literally mm-hmm. anything else.
Yeah, nothing.
But I can do this.
That's interesting. I mean, the video games are such a huge part of the culture, too. I'm going to skip ahead to some video game questions for Patrick here, because, you know, you've written an entire series on video games and all of that. And this must be just like such a huge part of your life, you know, with the game books here. I went the wrong way. There we go. Let's see. What was just kind of a basic one? What's your favorite Ninja Turtles video game then?
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, Turtles in Time is like the obvious answer. But it's just like I remember like there used to be a time in gaming where a game would just captivate you in the arcade.
Oh yeah,
and you would wait for it to be released on home console. With the hope that it was like half as good as the arcade game,
mm-hmm.
and
thank you, Gauntlet feel, Legends.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But like Ninja Turtles to the arcade game on the NES was like as good as a port on the NES that you could possibly have, to the point where it was just like, I rented that game when I was a little kid, and it was just like, okay, I don't need to play it in the arcade anymore. I could have it and I could take it home. And I spent countless hours playing that. But I mean, truth be told, I played the original one on the NES countless hours. I played the Game Boy games are so underrated. Those Game Boy games were mm-hmm. so good. They were so fun. The character models were so big for the Game Boy screen. They were just so much fun.
That's where Michael Bay got the idea.
Yeah. So too much Game Boy. Yeah, favorite. Yeah, too much. My favorite, to be fair, is the arcade game on NES, just because that was the one that, like, really, to me, made me feel like for the first mm-hmm. time that I was playing, like, as the Turtles, you know.
Yeah, that's great. I love that one. You know, were you guys like me that you were the one person in your group that just hit A and B at the same time to kill everybody with one hit?
I had so much fun with those games, man. Like, I remember, like, my dad hooked up like 4 or 5 speakers in my living room, and he would just blast like the music from the original NES version, like from the intro music. You know, where we just introduce all the characters. Yeah, man. And people, like, we lived on the 4th floor of an apartment building. We, like, rocked the whole block, and everyone was like, what is that music? And all the kids, like, Ninja Turtle music, you know? Yeah. So good.
I was originally going to sample that for the theme song of the podcast, and I'm like, they'll probably ding me. But ours is original music that is written with the samples from Konami. So all of the sounds from ours are pulled from that. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
So, not that I did it. Shout out to 8-Bit Alchemy. So, but imagine, guys, there's 4 of us. We're going to play Shredder's Revenge. You know, we're someone's going to have to fight over the characters here. Who are we playing as? Who are you guys going to pick? Because we got a Shredder's Revenge game going on.
I'll definitely go ahead and take Donnie.
I'll take Leo.
Are we including DLC?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I'll take Karai.
Okay, all right, good. Since Leo's taken, I'm taking Usagi Yojimbo, so, you know.
Nice. And, we got a team now, baby.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, level 16 is dead. You know, we're going to get that trophy. Nice. That's
pretty cool. I hate that game. Like, and it's not that I hate it because it's bad. It's a great game. I loved it. But I remember my first PAX East that I had ever spoke at. I did a panel. WrestleQuest, we had this tiny little booth, and we were getting, like, lines of people. And it was crazy. And I ended up taking a break and walking around PAX East and then looking at all the other booths, and they had, like, nobody. And then I got to the Shredder's, like, that booth, and they had longer lines than us. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, that would have been so cool for us to have. And then I played it there, and I was just like, and I went back over to the WrestleQuest people, and I was just like, guys, like, the Ninja Turtle game is really good. And they were like,
you're like, it's really? Over.
It is.
It is.
I mean, that's a AAA game with, like, a massive, really, you know, is. And it, like, WrestleQuest was like me doing the voices of, like, 90 characters and, like, maybe, like, 8 other people working on the game. So, like, I'm super happy with what we were able to accomplish over, like, 4.5 years with that game. But, like, that Turtles game, that PAX East, it was like 2022 or something like that. They rocked it. People were like, we're talking, the line was like 100 people deep waiting hours. That game, yeah, it was no joke. I had never seen anything like that before. So,
wow, an actual blockbuster.
Yeah, my favorite Turtles game is going to be the outlier in this group, probably because I was poor and grew up in the middle of nowhere, so my access was limited to things. But I had Tournament Fighters,
nice,
on the Super NES, dude. I played that game so much. That was probably my favorite Turtles game, just because that was the one that I had. It was for the longest and played the living daylights.
The one with Armagon, right? So Armagon was in that? Yeah. Absolutely.
That game was so much fun.
These are all in the Cowabunga collection now, so people can grab them and play them.
Oh, dope.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say you going to say the original Tiger handheld.
I did have that one, and I had Batman from the first Batman movie.
I had the X-Men one where you have to fight Magneto, and you could really just jump with Wolverine. And
I still have my Spider-Man one downstairs. Yeah,
that's just like lost treasure, where it's like, you know, the kids are all playing Minecraft, and I'm like, that's what we had. You know, it's It was like a calculator, but I mean, hours of fun.
The kids are all playing Mein Kampf.
Yeah, that's what they play these days. It's hard to find, but if you find it, that's...
I killed Patrick. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Wow. Okay.
My German grandfather is in heaven right now. It's like he got us below the belt there. Like, got to avenge that at some point.
It's all right. He's gonna make you like draw some cars or something.
Oh my like, god.
You're like, oh, that's only I'm getting really bad thoughts about cars and just like the duck thing.
we've had conversations at Legacy, like Chris Booth, the guy that he's doing Condry now. When he was doing one of our books, he's like, why do you have so many cars in this book? And I was like, why? You don't like to draw cars? He's like, nobody likes to draw cars.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like, a known thing. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you. A lot of times people don't like drawing guns either. You know, that seems to be the other thing. So
that's why so many 90s books just made up ridiculous guns.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You got this giant rifle with 20 barrels for Cable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like strapped onto him. So
with pouches.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of pouches.
I wanted to ask about pouches. No, I mean, I wanted to ask about voice acting.
My pouches?
For... yeah, it's like marsupials. Nice. So voice acting, you mentioned WrestleQuest and doing like 60 characters and things like that. Can you tell us a bit about your experience with voice acting, specifically in like video games?
Oh, it's like, man. Every day, I know that I'm going to get at least 3 emails. I'm going to get one from somebody that wants to get into voice acting. I'm going to get one email from somebody that is going to send me a script for a comic book. And then I'm going to get like one email from somebody that wants to become a journalist. It's like every day.
Did you get the 3 emails I sent today? Oh, no.
Yeah. It's like every day. And the voice acting thing, every day. Saturday, Sunday, like birthday, like every day it happens. I wake up to it. I go to sleep to it. I go to the bathroom to it. But like the voice acting thing, I tell people all the time, it's just like everyone gets into voice acting in a different way. You could have a reel. You could have all this. Like I had none of that stuff. What happened was I broke in after my first book had come out. I run ReviewFix.com. I own ReviewFix.com. I've been reviewing comic books, video games, music, theater, food for, you know, close to 20 years. And if I see a video game that I like, I email the developer. I hit them up on X, Twitter, and I'm just like, bro, your game looks awesome. I'd love to interview you. I'd love to check it out. And I found this game on Steam called The Padre. And it looked kind of like Minecraft mixed with like Castlevania 64. And it was about a Catholic. It was about a Catholic priest that got stuck in a mansion infested with zombies, and he's trying to find like one of his mentors and stuff like that. And the lighting effects were really cool. So I wanted to interview the team. They're from Bulgaria. We do an email Q&A. It gets really good traffic on my site. So they're like, "Would you like to play it?" I'm like, "Sure." So they send me the game and. It's like a point and click game. And I'm like not expecting that based on the visuals and stuff like that. So I was immediately, I love Maniac Mansion, you know, the Gabriel Knight series. Like I love old school point and click games.
Shadowgate.
So like, oh my God.
Damn, Shadowgate.
Yeah, man. Oh my God. So I'm just like, I'm in. The first line of text in the game is like, it's been a week since the death of, since the disappearance of Cardinal Benedict. So weak. W-E-E-K, right? It was spelled W-E-A-K. So I went to the guys. I'm like, listen, if you're going to have a game that's like this text heavy, you got to like proofread. Like you guys have killer score. You've got really cool character models. You've got great ambiance. I'm like, but if this game isn't edited properly, you don't have a game. People aren't going to take it seriously. So they're from Bulgaria. So they're basically like, well, would you want to edit the game? The dialogue of the game. And I'm like, sure. So we discussed like a price point. I edit like 4,000 lines of dialogue like within a day, send it back to them. They're like, update your Steam client. I update it. I start the game up. All my edits are in there. I'm like, oh my God, I just edited like game. Oh my God, this is crazy. So I thought I was done with them. And then like 3 weeks go by and they're like, oh, we have a whole bunch more dialogue for you. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it again. I'm like, but I want to be credited as a dialogue editor. And they're like, listen, if you feel like you could, if you want to write to like tighten up the dialogue, if there's any like, you know, improvements. So I'm like, okay. So I went in again. I tightened up and stuff like that. Then they were going to go to Kickstarter and they're like, we need you to edit the entire Kickstarter. I'm like, wow. So I do it. And then like maybe like 2 weeks before we're going to go live on Kickstarter, they're like, the voice actor for the main character, the Catholic priest, left. And I'm like, why? And he's like, oh, he said that he was having family problems. He can't do it anymore. And I like kind of laughed out loud and they're like, what? This isn't funny. Like, we're screwed, you know? And I'm like, no, we're really not. And so the thing is, like, this Catholic priest in this game before I took the voiceover, he sounded like Russell Brand. It was so, it's like, wow, I'm like stuck in this mansion. Like, wow, you know? And I'm like, it was so cringy. And it was to the point where it's like, I edited all the dialogue. I had written a ton of dialogue for the game. And I just had an idea of the way I thought the character was supposed to sound. So they're like, you know, we're going to have to open auditions. And
where
blah, blah,
are
blah.
The drugs going?
Josh, it was awful. It was so bad. And then
this looks like kind of a gothic Neil Diamond.
it was like awful. So then I'm like, let me audition. And they're like, what? I'm like, let me audition. And they're like, you do voice acting. I'm like, I listened to the Jerky Boys for 30 years. I'm like, I can, you know, I know what you're going for here. I know that like you need like a dark, you know, you need a bass heavy baritone. So I've always been good at that movie phone voice, like, you know, that movie trailer voice, like the Don LaFontaine, like, in a world, one man, one tortilla, PG-13. And I'm like, can't do that. People would just laugh their ass off the entire game. And for some reason, the Padre, you would think it would be a Hispanic priest, you know, yeah. They wanted an English voice. So
Brian combined the two voices. My name is Alexander and I'm the Padre.
And they were like, oh my God.
Fantastic.
And I'm like,
yeah.
So wow. I recorded like 8,000 lines of dialogue that day. I was coughing blood because it's like I had to go so low.
Too much. Yeah.
But same thing. They were like, oh, let's update the Steam client, restart it. I do. And then as soon as the game starts, you know, I hear my voice. And then that came out on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Steam. And then we did a sequel. But the thing was, the only reason why I got into that was because I was doing dialogue editing and I opened my big fat mouth. Which usually gets me into a little bit of trouble. And then what ended up happening was, since I have all these connections in the video game industry from all of the books that I've done, I've basically had like 8 or 9 other video game developers come over to me and go, I saw the Padre. And like the Padre only sold like 50,000 copies. But people that have played it go, you know what, the game's but you did a really good job on the voiceover. And I'm like, thank you. So then.
No. Is he playing with us?
He hit the pause button is what happened. Wait a second. He'll be right back with us, folks.
After the short message. Dun, 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 dun.
Let's fill the silence with more silence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also a good time where Justin can insert his, ad from Deadly Grounds Coffee. Coffee's so good, it's to die for. So, you know.
Are you dead yet?
No, but I do drink a lot of coffee.
Man, so do I. So,
he'll be back.
I'll be back.
What is your favorite coffee, by the way?
Let's see. Right now, there is one that I like, which is from up here, a store called Meyer, and it is a Michigan tart cherry coffee. It is so friggin' good.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like.
It's a medium roast, so it's not like dark, so it's pretty good.
I order coffee a lot of times. I'll order from the Bones Coffee.
Yeah, I had flavored.
There's really good. I like Death Wish Coffee.
Oh, Death Wish, yep.
And then my wife and I, we were in Wyoming back at Thanksgiving, and there was a company there, like a brewery there, called Snake River, and mm-hmm. they sell their coffee online. They had some of the best coffee I've ever drank in my life.
Really?
Yes.
Is it like the elephant poop coffee?
No, I've never tried that.
Okay, yeah. So that's coffee beans, I guess, that are passed through an elephant's body that, you know, which, I mean, really sounds like a Ninja Turtles thing. You know, it's
it sounds like an Adele album.
Oh, okay. Hello. Well, that would have to be a number, right? Like 76 or something. I don't know.
Lose Patrick altogether? Did he just give up on us?
No, he'll probably be back. Let's see. Lost his internet. He's trying to get it back. We'll see if we can get it back in. So, good stories. Right. Good stories all. So, you know, this will give us a chance to ask Josh some questions. So, you've done a fair amount of voice work yourself for your podcast. Specifically your horror series, The Fringes, which I happen to love. Any chance we're going to get more episodes or just at least finish off that arc of The Fringes?
I have a second season that is probably 80% finished. My biggest issue right now is I'm so busy on the comic book stuff and on the ministry side of things with my new position at the church and stuff. I've just got such limited time. I do eventually want to do it. I'm hoping maybe this summer.
Yeah.
I'll have a little bit more time on my hands. I would love to get back to it because I do love horror. And if you like The Fringes, you'd like my horror, like my short stories and stuff. I've got a bunch of horror short stories I can send you the link for that I have up on Medium.com. Oh, nice. If you just enjoy the horror, I've got some great horror stuff. I love writing horror. The Godfrey universe stuff has really been the big, like, all consuming thing for my time, the past like couple of years.
Now this is what we talked about years ago, right? Like you have like a whole universe planned out, right? Like
right.
down to yeah. like, these are ideas that you have for like action figures and like soundtracks and stuff, like everything, right?
Yeah, we have. So we just put out the first graphic novel. It's 174 pages, I think, of Apollyon and 20XX. And that is the beginning of our timeline. We have a novel that's coming out, a full-length novel that's the first of at least four novels that we have outlined. That novel's coming out in probably this summer. And we have a book called Colga, a comic called Colga that's coming out either in the late spring, early summer, that's set sort of in the middle era of our timeline. So like we've got books, we've got some short films we've made. My co-creator, Dan Evans, has a band that is working on albums of music that like EPs that follow that are in world stories.
Oh, wow.
And we are probably 60% done on a game. It's sort of a Metroidvania type game / bullet hell. It's a really cool game that acts as a prequel to our Biophile Colga book that's coming out very soon. So like we've got a lot of things going on all in and around this world. So when we call it a universe, like it legitimately is. But he and I have been working on it for about 10 years now.
Yeah, so that's crazy. I was surprised at like just the scope, because you had everything huge. Like planned out.
Well, that's what we wanted to do is, you know, we didn't want to ever have to come back and do a retcon type thing with it. We wanted to make sure we knew everywhere that story was going before we ever released anything. We don't want to release one volume and then, you know, you'll buy a comic. A lot of times with indie stuff, you'll buy a comic and it looks great and it's a good story. And then it's 2 or 3 years before you get another one. And, you know, if you get another one, or you might get two issues in and then it doesn't go anywhere. Well, we already know where this thing ends. We've got that timeline is fully planned out. And then we have a bunch of little side stories already planned inside that too. We got 40, 50 years worth of stuff. Like we'll never finish publishing all the stuff we've written and outlined for this world. Like, I mean, it's an ongoing thing that could outlive us.
It's crazy. It's like I know you're a big fan of Frank Herbert's Dune, and that's what it sounds like to me. Like the whole idea of that. Yeah.
We've talked about it, and like when it comes to our influences, Dune is one of our biggest ones. Like we've said to each other many times, like we want to make something on that scale. You know, if that's at all possible, we want it to be that scale. We want it's our story spans thousands of years.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. But hopefully that's
an epic tale, if you ask me. So
yeah, but hopefully it's the type of thing that any of those eras you can read it and it works as a standalone story and it's connected to a larger world, but like you can enjoy it as a standalone story. And if you want to enrich it, you can read the rest of it and say, okay, this is like Colga's over 1,000 years after Apollyon 20XX.
Wow.
So like it's got connective tissue, like incredibly connected stuff, but you don't have to have read one to enjoy the other. So,
oh, that's cool.
There he is.
Patrick's back.
There he is.
Just in time. We were just talking about the influences of Frank Herbert's Dune. So, pretty
nice.
He's like, what? What's that got to do with voice acting?
What just happened here? What's going on?
A little bit.
just a little bit. A little bit.
Since you're back. What can you tell our listeners about Condry in the Condryverse?
Oh, so much fun. So I started writing Condry when I was 18. I had gotten in a serious car accident, herniated four discs in my lower back, compressed four vertebrae in my neck, basically went from like the 6'4", 220-pound like jock to like the 6'4", 250-pound nerd. And I just had ensconced myself in velvet. Yes, in velvet. Yeah. Yes. That's the dream, right, Justin? That's the dream. while eating a pastrami sandwich,
oh, that was so good.
But like in Frank Miller, Highlander, in the Warriors, in Spawn, and you know, all this great stuff. And I just started writing this comic book series, but then I started going to college right after, and I remember showing my first journalism professor what would eventually become like Condry 0, 1, and 2. And this guy had covered gang violence in New York City. He wrote a book on Louis Sock Alexis, who was the first minority pro baseball player of all time. They named the Cleveland Indians after him. And the great journalist, had a ton of respect for him, and he read it, and he was just like, Pat, listen, I'm going to be brutally honest with you. He's like, as far as journalism goes, you could make a living for the rest of your life. He goes, you're that good. He goes, you're great. He's like, you're one of the best students that I've ever had. He goes, this is really cool, and it's fun. He goes, but you're going to be eating ramen, like, the rest of your life. Like, he goes, it's impossible to get, like, noticed doing this. So that was really like a, you know, to me. And I still kept doing it, but it took me a good like 17, 18 years to find Kieran Quinn, the artist who eventually did the first like 5 or 6 issues of Condry. And once we got him, the pieces all fell together, and I was able to tell like that really gritty street level story that I wanted to tell. But there's so much more to it. So the thing is like, if you like Daredevil, if you like Frank Miller, if you like early Spawn, you'll love Condry, but there's so much more to the character because of like his support system, the things that are going on around the city at the same time. Condry's like the origin of Condry's superpowers are really interesting, which we kind of tell in the Ashcan that Josh and I just finished, which we're going to send to the printer in the next couple of weeks. It's more based in reality and science than many superhero tales. But it's a lot of fun. So it's just like, I tell people all the time, it's like, it's a homeless vigilante. So it's just like, how the hell does a homeless guy fight crime? Like, this guy has problems that like no hero has, like Spider-Man's bitching again about Mary Jane smoking, you know, and Condry's big thing is like, he just wants a can of soup like to eat, you know? So that it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun writing it. And like, it takes place in like across the five boroughs of New York City. So there's a lot of times when you could like kind of notice like certain locations and things like that. It's been a lot of fun. Kieran Quinn did the first arc for us. Chris Booth is working on the next arc. Josh did a banger on the first like side story in there to like really flesh out one of like the series like main characters, Sarita. She's like Splinter like times like 1,000. She means like so much like to like the Condryverse. So like to have somebody like Josh on the reins of that was like super important. But again, bottom line is like if you like vigilante tales, you'll really like it. But then as the series goes on, you're gonna kind of be like, wow, there's some like Count of Monte Cristo in here. There's like some Don Quixote. There's like some warriors. There's some Highlander. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. If you've ever lost someone in your life that was close to you, like there's a part in Condry 1 where like Sarita is like walking with her cart in the middle of the night, walking home from the supermarket, and she's having a conversation with her dead husband, you know? And it's just like, I feel like that's a situation, like we've all been there, you know? So yeah, that's Condry in a nutshell for you.
Nice. Yeah. No, that actually sounds exactly like the type of thing I'd read, you know, reminds me a little bit too of Matt Wagner. You know, if you're familiar, guys, if you know Matt Wagner's mage, character, mm-hmm. Kevin Matchstick, Grendel, you know.
Yes, yeah, I was just going to say Grendel. I love that character design. That's a.
I would also say, design. Like, from an artistic standpoint, like, I don't know if you're not familiar with Kieran's work, that first arc of Condry that Kieran worked on really has a lot of Sam Keith Max vibes to me.
Okay,
like,
cool.
So, like, mm-hmm. if you like the kind of some of the exaggerated, not cartoony, but like exaggerated style that Sam did. Like Kieran's an incredible artist, and he's still one of those old school like pen on paper,
yep.
Watercolor kind of guys.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So like it feels like a 90s comic in that sense. Not like it's got better sensibilities than that in the writing, but like the Kieran's art is really dope on that book.
That's cool. I always loved the Marvel Comics Presents Wolverine by Sam Keith. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Great story where he fights Venom. It's crazy. Venom beat the shit out of him. So it's like, and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. That's Wolverine. Oh, yeah. No, we know. Yeah, he just got his guts ripped out by Eddie Brock. So
The cover, actually, to Condry 2 is like, I showed Kieran a beautiful scene from one of the early issues of the Max where the Max is just like sitting at a chair and the shadows are coming in from behind him. And I was like, we need to do something like that for the cover. And if you're not familiar with the Max, you'll just think it's like a really pretty cover. And if you're even into the Max, you'll be like, is he trying? It's like not a direct homage. It just does it. Like it does it the right way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you like the Max, if you love some of the offbeat Image titles like Sam and Twitch, the Max, you'll really dig the artistic.
Any love for War Star here? No.
Okay. Wow,
that was a good book.
That's a blast from the past, right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it also kind of has a little bit of, I can't remember the artist, but the early Mask comics that Dark Horse did. It looks a little bit like that too. Yeah,
Kieran's Bill Sienkiewicz, you know,
and like Chris Booth, who's working on it now, he just did Young Condry, like last year.
Pat? Yeah, last year around this time.
He did and Young Dorslash. Condry. Oh mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dorslash. I forgot he did Dorslash, which was, if you like horror, that's a quick little slasher book. It's a mm-hmm. lot of no fun. A lot mm-hmm. of fun. But no, like Chris's art style is it's a much more realistic. He reminds me of like the Hard Boiled, some of that series. Mm-hmm. So if you like really just hyper detailed backgrounds, hyper detailed stuff, man, everybody's firing on all cylinders on these books, is particular these Condryverse books. Like I sit back and get excited every time one of the guys drops a page in our group chat. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, guys. Y'all are killing it.
It's so funny because like everyone brings their own like sensibilities to things. And it's like, I don't know if I had this conversation in the Legacy chat, but I definitely had it with Chris where it's just like, he faded like the background and like really built up the contrast on the foreground. That's a cinematic device, mm-hmm. you know? And the thing is, Chris has like 20 years of experience in theater. He's pitched shows to like, he's done pilots and stuff like that. So he brings like an artistic ability, but like a love of like TV and theater to like his comic book work. And you can totally notice it by looking at the panels. So yeah, we're really excited for like the future. So it's like, it's so crazy to have like Kieran just did a book for us. Then Josh is doing stuff for us. And then it's like three different artists telling similar stories, but doing it in their own way. And it's just, it's been so much fun to put all these things together.
That's great. I'm going to be looking out for that. We've got the links and all that will be in the show notes. And for anyone watching on YouTube, you can see it here. The final thing I have to go to, because it seems like you may have one of the best perspectives on this topic of anyone we've had on the show. So, and we'll see how Josh goes with this, but who has the best pizza in New York, in your opinion?
That's crazy. That's a crazy
Domino's. Question. It's gonna be Domino's.
I don't even think they're allowed there.
No, there's a ton of Domino's. I order Domino's all the time. But
Sbarro. Yeah.
There used to be oh my god. Sbarro is like if you're starving and you're going to die and you want pizza, you should just die.
That's a Michael Scott reference. I don't know if you
I know. I love The Office. Okay. I don't know if they're still open because I haven't been there in so long, but there used to be a place called DeFarris in Brooklyn. This guy worked there for like 50 years, and it got to the point where like when I was in college that he was selling pies for like $45 a pie. And people would come from all over the world to have a pie from this guy.
My God.
Yeah, DeFarris. I don't know if they're still there. Also Spumoni Gardens is like a infamous, like their square. If you're looking for a square, they've been all over the place. They make a great upside down slice. So yeah, I would probably either go Spumoni or a DeFarris. There's also one other place. Oh my god, Josh, you'll appreciate this story. So there's you can get pizza for dirt cheap in Brooklyn. Like dirt cheap. Like we're talking like $8.
I saw the right thing.
Yeah, like but the pizza is awful. So the thing is, my former co-owner lives like co-owner of Legacy lives like four blocks away from me, and he ordered from like one of these like do the right thing pizzerias, and we had to pack like 150 orders from our Kickstarter, so we basically got everyone all in one spot, and like Steve, Afram, Kieran, and we were just packing orders from our Kickstarter. So before I get there, John's like, oh, why don't you pick up a pie? So like the guys have something to eat. I'm like, sure. So I pick up two pies and from a place that I go to. And this guy's family thought that like these pies were like the greatest thing that they had ever had before. And it was just like I felt terrible because it's like they were like, oh, how much was it? And I was like, oh, $40. And he's like, you paid $20 a pie? Tony around the corner. It's like $8 a pie. This place is called Fratelli's.
And like, yeah, you get what you pay for.
That's what I said. You know, I'm like, bro, no. Like, so then the thing is, they were all, this guy, his wife and his kids were all like shocked that I paid $20 for the pie. And then I'm like, just try it. And they tried the pie and it was just like their minds. Like I blew their minds because this guy like would, he would put sesame seeds in the crust.
Oh,
it's nice. Amazing. Hmm. It's so good. But yeah. I'm telling you, sesame seeds in the crust, it just makes, you know, but it was just so funny. So like, yeah, Fratelli's, Spumoni Garden, and DeFarris, those are my three.
Okay, all right. Now,
my favorite place up there, and I was looking at, because I haven't been to New York since back before COVID, but like I used to go quite a bit because my wife and I love going to Broadway, and I think this place is closed now. My favorite place, and it used to be up there, off of 48, West 48. It's a pizzeria. It was a place called Pizzeria Family. It's like an Italian restaurant. Oh my gosh, they had the best pizza. Like I remember the first time we went to New York and I had taken Ashley to see Wicked. And like we ate at Pizzeria. And like every time I've been to New York since then, I'd eaten there. I'm actually sad to know that it's closed now. But man, Pizzeria was so good. Mm. And it had like you know, it was an Italian family-owned place. You go in there, the owner would come out like Rocky and talk to everybody and like, hey, what you doing? How you been, man? You know, like, you just kind of go through the whole place and it just, you felt like, man, this guy, he treats me like family. Mm-hmm. I love that place. I'm sad it's closed now.
That's awesome. As long as it's not the pizza that is just like the dough with sauce and then they put like grated Parmesan on it. As long as that's not the pizza, because that's what I've had in New York before. They're like, oh, that's Authentico style. And I'm like, that is not what I want at all.
Nah, dude, it's all about the crust. Yeah. It's all about the crust. It's got to be crisp, but all to be, I got to be able to fold it. And it should, I shouldn't have to turn it over and pour a whole like gallon of grease out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I came from Connecticut where we had really, really good pizza. And out here in Illinois now, we either have deep dish or we have like that cracker thin crust. You cannot fold either of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, deep dish.
That New York slice is the complete like combo.
The big ass pepperoni.
Yep. Oh, I almost forgot. Oh, my God. Have you guys ever seen Saturday Night Fever?
Of course. Yeah.
So Lenny's. Oh, my God. I grew up like 9 blocks away from Lenny's. They just closed down this year. That the place where he gets the slice from, that place made banger pizza for 45 years. Oh, and you would get the
slices. It's a shame. There's been some really dope restaurants in New York that just, it's just not a place to, that restaurants can survive sometimes. There's been some good restaurants that closed.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love going to the Jekyll and Hyde place down there.
Jekyll and Hyde was great. I have the cups. Dude,
that was the best restaurant. It was such a fun, cool place.
Yep.
I was so sad when that place closed.
Just like a Chuck E. Cheese type place, or
no? Oh no, my God, it's like a burlesque, like even, Edgar Allan Poe. Like
it's like a speakeasy kind of place, and they had like it was all done up for like horror gothic themed, and it was funny. Like you had paintings and. And like mounted heads on the wall that would talk to you and animatronics.
Oh wow!
It was like a real house, like restaurant
horror kind of thing.
Such a cool place, man. It was so much fun.
Damn. So speaking of horrors, and this is kind of like Eric's nightmare. What's your
horrors? You say
horrors. That's for after the show. That's good. Okay. What is your guys' take on pineapple on pizza? Yay or nay?
Absolutely.
So the two Leo bacon fans and
pepperoni. With bacon and pepperoni.
Absolutely.
Not by itself.
Okay.
I like you better, Josh. I like you better now.
I like you better too.
I like you both evenly, but I like you better.
No pineapple juice on the pizza.
No, you got to cook it. You know,
the pineapple has to be like as little pineapple juice as possible, like just the pineapple, and then good some man, really Josh. Crispy bacon man. And pepperoni. Because then you get the sweet and sour and salty going. Right, yeah, man.
That's fantastic. Eric, you got any other questions for him?
No, I don't. But I just it's a crying shame that you like pineapple on pizza.
My wife introduced me to it. She's Hawaiian and Italian. So, you know, that's like a.
I mean, that's like pineapple mix, and pizza.
So doesn't my son.
That's kind of like
so,
the pizza.
Pat, are we gonna let the turkey out of the bag?
Sure, I think so. Double if gobble. They want to hear about it.
Sure.
It kind of makes sense.
I think so.
Go so for it. Justin, would you like to hear an exclusive for your podcast?
Absolutely.
So we're currently working on a ash can called the Midland Beach Turkey Ninjas, which obviously, like you can tell from the name and stuff like that, is like in a way our love to the Ninja Turtles in a way. So Staten Island, where I live, is one of the 5 boroughs of New York City, and it's the suburban borough. It's completely different from Brooklyn, Bronx, and stuff like that. It's infested with wild turkeys. Like you're talking, you have a block that like you could play hockey down, like Wayne's World, like game on, like it's completely like no, there's no crime. It's super nice, like suburban. I love my house. I never want to leave. I have a man cave. Like I love it. And then I'll go outside and there'll be like 6 or 7, like no exaggeration, like 45-pound turkeys with like, they do not F around. Like they don't let cars go by. Like they, and I've seen these turkeys like jump up and they sleep on top of power lines. Like They block ambulances from going inside the hospital. Like, these turkeys run this borough. So I was just like, you know what? This would be such a fun comic. So I wrote a script in early January that's very, you know, Sin City meets like early Ninja Turtles, Yojimbo, Stan Sakai style and stuff like that. And
nice.
Josh has like taken it and like it is like an absolute pisser. Like we're like three or four pages deep and it's super like it's straight funny. It's not like, cause we did a book on a book called Dem Goals last year. And that's kind of like, I was attacked outside Atlantic City by a seagull.
Oh no.
Literally. It took a bacon, egg, and cheese like right out of my hand. And then like it came down like Batman 89, just like that, and just like beat the shit out of me and my wife. So I was like, we gotta write a comic on that. But it was very like Ren and Stimpy style. It was a lot of fun, but it was very Ren and Stimpy style. This is more like it's like Art of War. Like these turkeys, they're very proud, you know, and they're just like, we run this town, and it's super fun. I cannot wait for people to check this out. If you love like the early like Usagi Yojimbo, if you like Sin City, if you like that tongue-in-cheek kind of humor, you'll totally
and, like
dig
I'm
it.
Keeping it real gritty and grainy. It's mostly black and white with little pops of color like Sin City. It's so much gotcha. Fun. It's a riot, dude.
Are you doing the art digitally or are you doing the art on Bristleboard?
Almost all of my art is digital. Okay, I just cool. work really hard at making sure it doesn't look like it.
Nice. That's the thing. Yeah. That's like one of the things I love about Josh. Like, there's so many times when you see art and you're just like, really? Like, it's done so digitally. Like, it looks so digitally. Like, you look at a building and all the windows look exactly, they're exactly adjacent to one another and stuff like that. And if Josh draws a building, you're like, yeah, like, he drew that with the stylus, you know, like there's a lot of tender love and care in what goes into what he does. And like, Josh is great at faces, eyes, like, man, he sent me a page last night and the turkey's face. I'm just like, oh my God. Like it's just the faces of these turkeys tell a story, you know, it's like this morning I pull up my blinds and I'm looking out the front of my house. And I didn't post the picture until later in the day, but there was literally like a turkey standing in front of like the house across the street from me. And he just like turns his head and he's like looking at me and my like son's Mike like Myers. Behind me. Yeah. And my son's behind me. And I just like instinctually go, look at this effing turkey. And my son just like runs over and goes, why is the turkey looking at you? And I'm just like, that turkey is looking at me, right? It's not just me. I'm not going crazy, right? And but it's just like what Josh drew totally like encapsulated that moment where like these turkeys, like you think they're these dumb animals, but they like totally like could like look into your soul and go, you're not going anywhere, you know?
Oh so, my.
But it's so funny. I've seen them stop traffic. Like, and there's like, imagine like 15 like Italians that are like, oh, what's going on here? Oh, these turkeys, move. Let's
ooh,
go.
You freaking turkey.
And the thing is, there's like governmental ordinances and laws. Like, it's illegal to hunt them.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you cannot, like, they legit run the borough. Like, it's so funny. Gosh. You have not lived until you're walking in like 15 degree weather outside of a hospital and you see 40. Turkeys sleeping on power lines outside of a hospital and they're up in the air and they can jump that high. I don't think you guys have ever seen a turkey jump 10-15 feet in the air.
I've seen it. It's nuts. Yeah. I saw like them shake down a rabbit hutch one time for the food and it was like, oh my God, it was like going back to high school gym class and watching somebody get bullied. I'm like, this is rough.
The turkeys are mean, man.
Yeah.
It's not fair. Like,
oh.
You know,
oh, so. All this entitlement, turkey entitlement.
But that's going to be a really fun book for us. Like we have a lot of fun books. Like we have like The Job, which is about a pro wrestler that loses all of his matches and is him and his hot wife Rob Banks together. That's a lot of fun, you know? But like, this is going to be a really like fun book. I'm really excited for people to.
Yeah. We barely scratched the surface, but you always have such great questions. Thanks for coming on and letting us ask you questions.
Man. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for having me on. Absolutely.
You know, and with that folks, we'll let you go. For the audio listeners, we'll be right back with your pizza recipe of the day. And to the YouTube listeners and watchers, thanks for joining us.
It's pizza time.
And now, in a segment that we call Pizza Time, where we discuss any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle or pizza-related food, I give you Pizza Time. Today's pizza is the Mighty Meatball and Sauerkraut Pizza. This Reuben can be found on just about any New York deli menu. The classic is made with corned beef, sauerkraut, Swiss cheese, and Thousand Island or Russian dressing. The turtles substitute turkey meatballs for beef, since they won't dry out in the oven, and pizza for bread, because they're on a diet, bro! The ingredients. Meatballs. 1/2 cup of plain breadcrumbs. 2 tablespoons of finely grated Parmesan cheese. 1/4 cup chopped fresh flat-leaf parsley, plus more for a garnish. 1/2 small yellow onion, finely grated or minced. 1 large clove of garlic, finely grated or minced. 1 tablespoon of ketchup. 1 large egg, whisked. 1/2 tablespoon of salt. 1/2 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. 1 pound ground turkey. Sauce. 1/2 cup sour cream. 3 tablespoons of ketchup. 2 tablespoons of pickle relish. Pizza. We need cornmeal or flour for dusting. Extra virgin olive oil for greasing. 1 pound pizza dough ball, homemade or store-bought. 3/4 cup drained sauerkraut. 3/4 cup shredded Swiss cheese. Fine sea salt. Freshly ground black pepper. And 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh parsley. Instructions. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with your baking steel or your stone in the center position. Line a heavy-duty rimmed baking sheet with a parchment of aluminum foil. Make the meatballs. In a large bowl, combine the breadcrumbs, Parmesan, parsley, onion, garlic, ketchup, egg, salt, and pepper. Next, mix well with a wooden spoon and then add the turkey and mix with your hands until the ingredients are all fully incorporated. Step 3. Scoop out 1 tablespoon of the mixture and roll it into a ball with your hands. Repeat the rest of the mixture. You should have about 24 meatballs. Step 4. Place the meatballs on the prepared baking sheet, spacing them about 1 inch apart. Drizzle them with olive oil and bake for 15 minutes or until cooked through. Step 5. Remove the baking sheet from the oven and set the meatballs aside to cool. Step 6. When they are cool enough to handle, cut 8 meatballs in half and place the rest of them in an airtight container to be eaten later in the week. These meatballs are delicious with marinara sauce or pesto. They'll keep for 3 to 5 days in the refrigerator or up to 6 months in the freezer. To assemble, increase the temperature to 500 degrees Fahrenheit. If you're using a baking stone or a steel pizza peel, dust the pizza peel or inverted baking sheet with cornmeal or flour. Using the same baking sheet as to bake your pizza, remove the parchment or foil and rub the baking sheet lightly with olive oil. If you're using the baking stone or steel pizza peel, turn the oven to broil. Stretch or roll the dough into a 12-inch disc and place the prepared pizza peel or baking sheet. Step 5. In a small bowl, stir together the sour cream, ketchup, and relish. Step 6. Spread 2 heaping tablespoons of sauce onto the dough, then arrange the meatball halves on top, cut side down. Step 7. Sprinkle on the sauerkraut and the cheese and season with salt and pepper. Shimmy the dough from the peel or the hot baking stone and transfer the baking sheet to the oven. Step 9. Bake until the crust is golden and the cheese is just beginning to brown in spots, about 6 to 8 minutes on the baking stone, 10 to 15 on the baking sheet. Step 10. Remove the pizza from the oven and let it rest for 5 minutes, then sprinkle with parsley. Slice and serve the rest of the sauce for dipping. Lighten it up, dudes. You can use whole wheat pizza dough, whole wheat breadcrumbs, salt-free ketchup, low-fat milk, low-fat cheese, and plain yogurt instead of sour cream. And that is your pizza recipe for today, the Mighty Meatball and Sauerkraut. Kind of a Reuben pizza.
Cowabunga, dudes!
Thank you for listening to the Epic Tales from the Sewers podcast. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. This podcast has no affiliation with Eastman, Laird, Mirage Studios, IDW Studios, Archie Comics, or Nickelodeon Studios. This podcast is a member of the Dorkening Podcast Network. Check out thedorkening.com for other podcasts. Epic Tales from the Sewers is recorded by Justin Cooper and Eric Will. We'll be right back.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. We have very active lifestyles. It's not all wandering the countryside aimlessly or scaring passing motorists. And we all love a good cup of joe. And there's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. Bold, robust, delicious. It's coffee that can wake the dead. With over a dozen different roasts and flavors, Deadly Grounds can satisfy the most finicky of coffee addicts. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
It took me 10 years to make the perfect man cave.
And then we took it over. And we made it into the multiversal chamber.
Then I started my own podcast.
And we took that over too.
And we're the co-hosts, the Multiverse Kids.
Yeah, and I'm the dad, the geeky dad. And every week,
we review the movies, shows, and books.
Games and toys.
Yeah. And sometimes we even have a special guest. So, join us every week on the Geeky Dad Podcast.
Greetings and shabibins. We are the Retro Redoctopus Cephala Podcast, a long-form bi-weekly show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good, but I don't know what all those words mean.
I think what Parasite seems trying to say is that on Retro Redoctopus, we explore a range of retro goodness, from toys, video games, and movies, to cartoons, and even snacks and school lunches.
Oh.
And we do it all with a positive spin, a slew of killer guests, and some very adult language.
And you know what else is cool?
No.
This crazy show is part of the Dork King Podcast Network, with new episodes every Technical Tuesday.
What's that?
And if waiting 2 weeks for a new episode gives you a sad, know that we drop bonus episodes all the time, like the off-format Crow's Nest and an interview series we call The Brick.
You can listen to Retro Redoctopus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any app that's cool enough to carry the only show that celebrates all the things that make growing up awesome.
Hello, intrepid listeners. This is the Generation Playlist Podcast, a podcast about music where we are your guides through a particular group or artist.
We talk about the music, and then we make a customized playlist to share with you, our listeners. And you can check us out wherever you listen to podcasts and find our playlists on Spotify.